Folks, I have been awfully grateful the last 2 days to see in the Syracuse newspaper that though 150 years have passed, this community's newspaper, at any rate, and many of this community's people have not forgotten the extraordinary role played by Central New York soldiers at the Battle of Gettysburg, which was 150 years ago today and tomorrow and Wednesday. I am a, to say student of history would be an overstatement. I admire the deeds of the men and women who went before, and I always look for inspiration from them. The Civil War is a large and complex event, and my family's been to Gettysburg a few times. I suspect yours has been as well. I would not claim to have any significant or comprehensive knowledge about how that battle was fought, though. I've stayed there and watched the map light up here and there, and I've read different books, but I find myself still pretty ignorant, most particularly of the specific role played by Central New York soldiers. We're honored to be joined by someone who is not afflicted by such ignorance, the curator of history of the Onondaga Historical Association, Mr. Dennis Connors. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks.
I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, especially on this important anniversary. And so my question is kind of open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
What should a person in Central New York know about their region and that battle?
Well, there were several units organized in Onondaga County in Central New York that fought throughout the Civil War. Gettysburg is, of course, one of the battles that most people are familiar with. Also, it happens to be the kind of the pivotal battle of the Civil War, plus sort of physically the closest that occurred to Central New York, just down, you know, down the road there in Pennsylvania. And we currently have an exhibit up here at the Historical Association about the units and the men from Onondaga County who fought at Gettysburg, focusing specifically on nine individuals. Individuals that we had photographs of, you know, in their actual military garb or in their uniforms, and also ones that we had in their own words, either in letters or diary entries or what have you, where they commented and gave their, you know, personal thoughts about the battle that they were engaged in. So that seemed like a good thing for us to do on the occasion, the 150th anniversary.
The deal was, of course, that you know, it was us versus the South, the Union versus the Confederacy. Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia decided they wanted to bring the game to us. And so this massive foray, they hoped, into Pennsylvania, into our cities here, we sent down Hooker and then replaced by Meade with the Army of the Potomac to try to stop them. And these two armies came face to face in and around Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Right, and it was kind of an evolving battle, as you mentioned. It took developed over 3 days, and because all the troops weren't all on the battlefield at exactly the same moment at the beginning, so it was kind of an evolving battle. And the units from Onondaga County saw their major action on the second and third day of the battle. Two of the units, two of the infantry units, the 149th New York Volunteers and the 122nd New York Volunteers, wound up defending Culp's Hill. Now, that may be not as familiar to some people as phrases like Little Round Top, but it's very similar in the aspect that the Union line was anchored at two hills. The far left was at Little Round Top, which was attacked on July 2nd and has sort of been made famous by the defense of Colonel Chamberlain and the 20th Maine. But later that same evening, after the Union forces had successfully defended Little Round Top, the Confederates made an equally intense attack on the far right of the Union line, which was anchored at Culp's Hill. And that's where the 149th was in a position almost similar to Chamberlain and his 20th Maine, holding down the edge of the Union line. And they were outnumbered, the Union troops were outnumbered that evening about 3-1 by the attacking Confederates. But just like Chamberlain at Little Round Top, the 149th held the high ground. They had the favorable position. They were behind breastworks, and they were able to withstand several assaults by the Confederates that evening. The Confederates renewed the attack the next morning, and the Union forces had, General Meade had thrown some more reinforcements in that day. And lo and behold, one of the reinforcements was another unit from Onondaga County, the 122nd. And the soldiers, these units were all made up of people from, you know, similar backgrounds and towns and so forth. And so they were quite pleased to see their neighbors fighting alongside them there. The two units, it was the only time during the entire war that those two infantry units from Onondaga County fought side by side in the same battle.
What you're describing, Sir Norsuga, Dennis Connors from the Onondaga Historical Association, if I'm following, what you're describing happened on the evening of the second day into the third day. Is that correct?
Right. The attacks, the actual Confederates actually did manage to flank the Union line late that evening of the 2nd. The problem was it got dark, and the Confederates weren't sure exactly where they were. The Union troops were holding on to their breastworks by their fingernails, but the action sort of ceased because of darkness. All that evening, or I should probably say early morning of the 3rd, reinforcements were brought in to strengthen that position, and by the time the Confederates renewed their attack at daylight, the Union position, they were no longer flanking the Union position because the Union had reinforced that hill. And so they tried to continue their attack, tried to take it, but they couldn't do it on the 3rd. And they pulled back. And, of course, the big event on the 3rd later that afternoon was the famous Pickett's Charge, of which a third unit from Onondaga County, an artillery battery, Battery B, the 1st New York Light Artillery, or sometimes known as Pettit's Battery after its commander, which was a unit that was organized primarily in the Beeville, Baldwinsville area, they found themselves smack dab on Cemetery Ridge on the 3rd, facing that whole Confederate force, Pickett's Charge, and they bore, like many of the artillery units on that ridge, they bore the brunt of that attack on the afternoon of the
3rd. Which was a massive outpouring of men, thousands and thousands of men charging directly at the Union lines.
Yeah, and that it was the fellow that we have representing from the Battery B is a Corporal James Decker, who witnessed Pickett's Charge and was involved in some of that hand-to-hand fighting. And needless to say, like many of the Union, he was very impressed with the bravery of those Confederates marching into that field of fire, but at the same time proud that they were able to hold their position and defeat that attack.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Dennis Connors, he's the curator of history at the Onondaga Historical Association. We'll ask him address and how to see their exhibit in half a moment. But thus far, sir, so the big sesquicentennial anniversary, 150 years, tomorrow and Wednesday will be special milestones for Onondaga County troops participation. Could you, one, tell us where you are and when people can see the exhibit? And then, two, tell us briefly what happened Monday, 150 years ago today. And then tell us the story about the flagstaff, please.
Okay. Well, the exhibit is up at our museum, which is in downtown Syracuse, 321 Montgomery Street, just sort of midway between City Hall and the courthouse. And the museum is free. It's open to the public, and it's open Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wednesday through Sunday, I should say, from 10 until 4 p.m. And the exhibit will be up through August 2nd. What happened specifically on July 1st was the 150 years ago was the two armies kind of stumbled into each other. Some Union cavalry under General Buford had come into the town of Gettysburg, and saw some advancing Confederate troops who were just kind of heading into Gettysburg because they were trying to sort of, General Lee was trying to sort of get his forces organized, get them concentrated into an area. Buford realized that that was a very important crossroads there, and he positioned his cavalry as sort of a unmounted defensive position along the western side of Gettysburg and ran into some Confederate infantry. And the battle just sort of developed from there. Some Union reinforcements came in, and they sort of started to get the upper hand, and then more Confederates showed up. And it was kind of a seesaw battle there the first day, just to the west and the northwest of the village of Gettysburg. And then eventually it just so happened that more Confederates wound up getting on the battlefield that first day than Union forces, and eventually they just pushed the Union forces back through the town. There was actually literally some street fighting right through the village of Gettysburg, and the Union forces retreated to Cemetery Hill, which was some high ground to the south of the village, and that position was sort of, again, high ground, reinforced, and the Confederates, even though they sort of held the upper hand, they'd been fighting all day long, and troops were kind of pretty wasted at that point, and so the Confederates sort of called off the attack and decided, you know, they'd wait until they gathered more of their forces the next day to renew the attack. But, of course, at the same time, the Union forces were also coming and reinforcing their line
at great speed, setting
the stage for that, you know, confrontation on the 2nd.
Coming at great speed. If I understand correctly, I speak with Dennis Connors, who's with the Onondaga Historical Association. That first day, I think the Union had 22,000 troops engaged versus 27,000 from the Confederate States engaged. And there were just tons of troops which hit this small town and environs. Can you hold on a second, sir? And
sure.
We'll talk more after the break. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Dennis Connors is teaching us a little bit of our history, and we're grateful to him for that. He's from the Onondaga Historical Association. They have a special exhibit. I hope that you will get down and see it. It runs through about the beginning of August. And also, I think that the stories in the paper, and if you go to Syracuse.com, there are some wonderful interactive links at the bottom that will show you how the three-day battle worked out, and have other resources that I think will be very interesting for you. I'm grateful to the paper, to the Historical Association, Mr. Connors, for helping us better appreciate what 150 years ago people from right here were up to their eye teeth in. We'll be back in half a moment on 570 WSYR. Welcome back, gentle listener. 150 years ago today, the battle at Gettysburg was commencing. It was a turning point in that war. It was the biggest battle fought in modern times, at least in recorded history, in the Western Hemisphere. It was an intense emotional turning point in the American heart, as well as in the conduct of that war there. We're honored to be joined to discuss it, teach us about it, Dennis Connors from the Onondaga Historical Association. He's their curator of history. There's a story about a flagstaff. Could you tell that to us, please, sir?
Yeah, that's a great story. These units, these infantry units especially, had color bearers. They would carry the stars and stripes, the U.S. colors, and usually a regimental banner, regimental flag as well. And this was very important. You have to understand those battles back then were using black powder, and there was a lot of smoke on the battlefields. And so those flags helped the soldiers see where their position was, see where their commander was. So they played a strategic role in the battle, or a tactical role in the battle, and they also were a source of pride. They were a symbol for that particular unit. So the color bearers, who did not carry arms, they carried the flags. That was a very quite an honor and duty to carry those particular flags. Well, as I had mentioned earlier on Culp's Hill, the firing was quite intense in that Confederate attack, and the color bearer, Color Sergeant Lilly, was holding the flag of the 149th, and it was a pretty beefy wooden staff, but the firing was so intense that the bullets actually shot through the staff, and it fell over and tipped to the top part of it with the colors, fell over the breastworks. And Lily jumped over and retrieved the flag, the top part of the staff. And to fix it, he mended it. He essentially made a splint. He took some pieces of a box and a leather strap and sort of wrapped it together so that he could have his full staff to hold up again. And that was, as I said, any of those the flags that were damaged in battle, and a lot of them were shredded with bullet holes and so forth, those were all considered sort of badges of honor for that flag to show that that unit was in intense combat. So they didn't go and throw that old staff away and go and get a brand new staff. They kept the repaired staff for the rest of its use during the Civil War, and that flag eventually came back to Onondaga County. and the flag was restored in the last few years and is in permanent storage over at the Onondaga County Courthouse, along with the staff still bearing Sergeant Lilly's repairs. We were able to, through the generosity of the Onondaga County Clerk, we were able to borrow that staff and bring it back for this exhibit so people can see it there on display at our museum. But the story goes beyond that, because when the 149th had the opportunity to put their monument up at Gettysburg, as a lot of the other units do, that was the image that they wanted on their monument, because, as was explained in some of the material we have in our collection, the symbolic aspect of mending the flag, which Sergeant Lilly literally was doing, to a lot of these veterans after the war, they felt that what they were doing in fighting the Civil War was they were mending the flag of the United States, in the sense that the withdrawal of the Confederacy had broken that flag, broken the Stars and Stripes. And so in fighting the Civil War for 4 years, they were mending the flag. And so that symbolism of Sergeant Lilly actually mending it during the battle stood for what they felt they were fighting the entire war for. And so that that scene wound up, of him repairing it, wound up on the monument at Gettysburg. And, of course, to anybody who's been downtown to a Clinton Square Festival or whatever, and has looked at the big Soldiers and Sailors Monument there on the side, the west side of it, that is the same scene, Sergeant Lilly kneeling down, repairing the flag, repairing the staff. And if people want to see the actual staff that was at Culp's Hill on July 2nd, they can come over to the museum here and look at the real thing.
Tell us location and times again, please, sir.
321 Montgomery Street, and the museum is open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. During the week, it's from 10 until 4, and then on Saturday and Sunday, it's from 11 to 4, right in the middle of the block of 300 Street in Montgomery, right across from the YMCA there.
If one were to come this Wednesday, one could look at that staff on the 150th anniversary of it being shot through.
Right.
Let me ask you, as an historian, what's the significance of this anniversary to you, sir?
Well, I think, you know, it reminds us of what this nation has gone through in the past, that, you know, to be what a lot of people consider the greatest nation on earth is not something you just sort of automatically, magically happens. There's a lot of struggles and trials and errors that a country has to go through. The Civil War being one of the most difficult and tragic, but also something that ultimately resulted in the long run in a much greater country. So I think, you know, these anniversaries force us, hopefully, to sort of reflect on those things and realize that, you know, even though we face difficulties today, and hopefully we don't have to get into something as horrendous as what the Civil War was, but that, you know, there are going to be difficulties that a nation has to overcome, and, you know, we've overcome worse things in the past, and so hopefully we can face some of our problems in the future and get through those as well.
Outstanding. Dennis Connors, thanks so much for speaking to us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you. Take care. He's the curator of history at the Onondaga Historical Association, and to be honest with you, I didn't want to put him on the spot, but in the break, I'm going to have producer Rob Wegman call him back and see if he'll come talk to us some more tomorrow and talk to us some more Wednesday and tell us a little bit about some of those men who are specifically profiled at the Historical Association, men from here who went there and fought one of the biggest battles in American history. Syracuse, this is your heart. It is your heritage. We'll be back right after the Don Lark newscast on 570 WSYR.